You're listening to an Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat Minisode.
Who is Spider-Man? He's a criminal, that's who he is. A vigilante, a public menace. What's he doing on my front page?
Mr. Jameson, your wife is on line one. She needs to know if you...
Mr. Jameson, there's a page six problem.
We have a page one problem. Shut up.
Right.
Well,
he's news.
If they're really important clients, they can't wait.
They're about to.
He pulled six people off that subway car.
Sure, from a wreck he probably caused. Something goes wrong and this creepy crawler is there. Look at that. He's fleeing the scene. What's that tell you?
He's not fleeing. He's probably going to save somebody else. He's a hero.
Then why does he wear a mask? What's he got to hide?
She just needs to know if you want the chintz or the chenille in the dining room.
Whichever one's cheaper.
Mr. Jameson, it's like this. We double booked page six. See, so both Macy's and Conaway's both have three quarters of the same.
We sold out four printings.
Sold out?
Every copy.
Tomorrow morning, Spider-Man, page one, with a decent picture this time. Move Conaway to page seven.
There's a problem with page seven.
I make it page eight and give him 10% off. Okay. I make it 5%.
That can't be done.
Get out of here!
Problem is, we don't have a decent picture. Eddie's been on it for weeks. We can barely get a glimpse of him.
Oh, what, is he shy? If we can get a picture of Julia Roberts in a thong, we can certainly get a picture of this weirdo. Put an ad on the front page. Cash money for a picture of Spider-Man. He doesn't want to be famous. And I'll make him infamous.
And welcome, everyone, and thank you very, very much for checking out this Epic Film Guys minisode. This was recorded as part of episode 106, and back in that episode, Dan joined us from Netflix and Swill to review Spider-Man Homecoming with Justin. And unfortunately, that episode just ended up running so long that I actually clipped out our top five Spidey moments, but I didn't want anybody to miss out on this segment. So we're going to go ahead and present that to you right now in full. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very, very much for listening to the Epic Film Guys podcast. And Justin and Dan, fantastic review of Spider-Man Homecoming, and Loy Sauce also dropping his thoughts there during the segment break. We're super, super sad that we didn't get a chance to have Loy Sauce on the show, but I'm pretty sure, looking at his comments over in the live stream while you guys are reviewing the film, he pretty much agrees with you guys in terms of your final thoughts about the film and everything. So, yeah.
Here's my question, though. Here's my question, Nick.
Check.
Based on me and Dan giving it praise and Loy Sauce, are you ever going to watch the movie at some point? Like, if I buy the Ultra 4K HD and give you the digital code, will you at least watch it?
Sure.
Okay. Epic Film Guy Nick just said on the podcast, unless he edits out later, that he will watch Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh my god, it's so edited. It's so gone. What are you talking about?
You asshole. You dick. You dick. You son of a bitch.
All right. We've actually got some respondents over on Facebook for this next segment as well. Our top five Spidey movie moments. And since Dan is our guest, Justin, why don't we go ahead and kick it over to Dan. And
sure.
Why don't you start us off with your number five best Spider-Man movie scene?
All right. Now, I might get some shit for this because, you know, it's true faithful comic book fans probably dislike this scene. But my number five is the death of Gwen Stacy from Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
That is
also my number five.
Hell yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, it's super telegraphed how they're handling it, especially if you're a comic fan, because she's wearing the exact same outfit she does in that Spider-Man comic book that she is killed in. So, I mean, like, you know it's coming, you know it's happening, and unfortunately, it happens. You know, it takes away the best part of the Amazing Spider-Man movies, which is the chemistry between Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man Peter Parker and Emma Stone's Gwen Stacy. Like, that is clearly the best part of those movies. So, removing that, I really did want to see a third one just to see how the movies progress past that point, because how do you get through another movie without having the best aspect of your movies?
Yeah,
that makes total sense.
I can absolutely agree with that. I'll jump in here as well, Justin, because this is also my number five.
Do it up.
And I wrote up some blurbs for all of these, so I'll just punch them in here as we go. But I said, you know, the rest of the movie is an extremely mixed bag. There's absolutely no question about that. This movie is all over the fucking place. You have Electro getting some decent character development for maybe 15 minutes, and then he turns into Electro, and then the Times Square battle happens, and he disappears for the rest of the fucking movie almost. But, I mean, I think this scene is amazing simply because of the performance of Andrew Garfield. I mean, he's an amazing actor, and he really brought his A-game playing Spider-Man in these films. And if he had better material to work with than he got, I really think those Amazing Spider-Man films would have been something better. But it's just unfortunate that they ended up being what they were. But, I mean, his performance, and Dan's absolutely right in terms of the chemistry between the two characters, they're absolutely fantastic. They dated while they were making these films, so of course they definitely have a very, very good connection. But yeah, that's why I also put it on as my number five, because he 100% sells that scene, even though the rest of it is just, the rest of that movie is just kind of shit.
Yes.
Moving on to my number five, I got to say this much. A lot of people had mentioned in the Raimi films that Spider-Man didn't joke enough. He wasn't menacing enough. He wasn't, you know, he didn't have a swagger. And the part of the first Amazing Spider-Man that got me the most was the, "You found my weakness, small knives." Garfield totally sells it so fucking well with this carjacker.
He does.
He gets in the back of the car. He's got a swagger. You see the way his head's bobbing, the way he moves when he's shooting his webs at him against the wall. Then he runs up real quick against his face, and he's menacing. He's scary. Like, he's ready to, like, you know, he's trying to interrogate this guy. I love that. That's something that was missing from Homecoming for me, but I get why it was. But that was so perfect for me. And I am the minority, but I love the suit and the Amazing Spider-Man. I love the yellow lenses in the eyes, and I love the way it looks on screen. And I love Garfield Spider-Man. So I had to find something. That is my number five, the carjacker scene. Do I look like a cop? And I forget what the exact
I'm wearing
is,
red and blue tights, and you
red and blue tights. You think I'm a cop? Yep. And the way he's like, he's flipping his hands around and stuff, and like he's swagger. It's great. It's fantastic. So that's my number five, guys.
All right. Okay. Back over to Dan for number four.
All right. Well, this is the moment that I think that Epic Film Guy Justin's going to be talking about in his top five moments from the Spider-Man series. This is the moment from Homecoming, and this moment is riffing off of Amazing Spider-Man number 33, where in that episode, Spider-Man has an entire building collapse on top of himself.
That's what, God damn you. How did you know? We didn't even talk about this. How did you know this was going to be?
Because I know. Like, this is the best moment from that movie. That's not even
it is. I agree with you 100%, Dan. That's strange.
Yeah, so in Homecoming, the Vulture causes a building to collapse on Spider-Man. And during this scene, Spider-Man, you know, being the 14-year-old kid, he is super helpless. He's like, "Hey, help, somebody help me." He's like on the verge of tears. And he eventually realizes that, you know, Tony Stark can't hear him. Happy Hogan can't hear him. He has to do this himself. He has to either push this building off of himself to stop the Vulture from getting more weapons to go, you know, hurt more people, or he has to just give up. And he wills himself, just being like, "Hey, come on, Spider-Man. Come on, Spider-Man. Come on, Spider-Man." And he finally lifts himself and all of this rubble and debris off of him and swings back into action. It's such a great scene for the movie.
It was fantastic. I just have to jump onto that, Nick. I hope you don't mind, but
do it.
That was the moment in the film, Nick. This is the one moment in the film where I was like, I'm watching a Spider-Man movie, not a Marvel movie, not a Sony movie. This is Spider-Man. And even though, like I said, I'm going to call him Spider-Kid, just kind of bust his balls a little bit.
To be fair,
but
Sony has more misses than hits in their Spider-Man series than not.
but this moment gave me goosebumps. It's that, and it's almost a very simple scene that you would see in early comic book movies. We see the hero fallen. He's been destroyed. He's been hurt, and you finally see him vulnerable. And in this case, we see a kid. This is a kid who has these powers, and Dan said he's full of himself. He's trying to be part of the Avengers in this movie. And in this case, Vulture takes him out like nothing. It's a great scene, by the way. It's a fantastic scene where that whole flying sequence that goes through and that takes out the building, and he just crushes him like a bug. And then when he comes up, Spider-Man, I'm Spider-Man, and then bursts out of it. The way it's done, it's like I had goosebumps all over me. So that's my number four. Fantastic sequence.
Favorite. I'm pretty good with you guys.
Probably my favorite sequence of the entire film, man.
All right. Well, I'm going to tip things back a little old school for my number four, and I've just got this to say, guys. Bonesaw is ready.
And then, of course,
for 3 minutes.
I just rewatched.
Of course, Bruce Campbell's the announcer.
Campbell's the announcer, man. The entire wrestling match in the first Spider-Man film. I just rewatched these films over the past weekend because I recorded an episode with John from the Now in Technicolor podcast where we talked about the Raimi trilogy. And this is the moment in the film where this film picks up and just takes off. You get introduced to Spider-Man. Of course, yeah, the immortal Bruce Campbell announces the amazing Spider-Man. You know, it's so, so amazing. And then the fucking Macho Man, of all people, they get the Macho Man Randy Savage to play Bonesaw in this scene. And then, like, and Dan's absolutely right when he mentioned, or I'm sorry, Justin's absolutely right when he mentions that Maguire doesn't really do as many of the quips as Garfield does in the Amazing Spider-Man films, but this is one of those scenes where he's clung to the top of the cages like, that's a great suit. Did your husband make it for you? And oh my god, and like the Macho Man, of course, the Macho Man is the Macho Man. He's just incredibly over the top, but that's just exactly what you expect from the Macho Man as Bonesaw. It's so, so good, and it finally sells you on Spider-Man's abilities. It's such an amazing scene. And like I said, that in that movie, that's where that film absolutely takes off for me, because like the beginning part of that movie when I was rewatching it, and I don't want to get in too big of a sidebar on this, but like the beginning part of that movie, I was like, all these people are fucking assholes and I hate them. Except for Aunt May, because she's gold. Rosemary Harris is fucking brilliant in those three movies, but
she's so good.
She's so good. Oh. Like it's just when that scene hits, and then when he dons the outfit, and then of course you have the whole follow-up scene where he lets the robber go, and that's an incredible sequence all unto itself, where Uncle Ben ends up getting killed. But it's just great. So yeah, that's my number four, the wrestling match in the original Spider-Man film. I think we're
over to Dan
now for number three.
Yeah, right? We are.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about honorable mentions or no?
We will. Yes, no. We will.
Okay. No. Okay. I'll leave it. Okay.
No.
Justin
no.
will, okay. But we will.
All right. A spider crawled on the wall. Honorable mention. I'm just kidding. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure because I didn't know if I should mention it, mention that then or now. So my number three is from the best Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man 2. And it is one of, if not the only horror type scene that you ever see in these movies. And of course, I am talking about the birth of Dr. Octopus. It is the scene where he is in surgery and like these doctors are just like, man, let's just get these metal arms off. And all of a sudden he snaps back to reality and these metal arms just go crazy, just killing people. Now,
this
scene could have benefited more if there was like an R-rated cut where we actually see the tentacles.
Well, it's very much an Evil Dead style. It's Sam Raimi, man. Okay. And it's funny you mentioned this because this is one of Loisas's favorite scenes. Mm-hmm. It's one of my, if there's honorable mentions, there it is. Because when I saw this in theaters, there was chills down my fucking spine because you got someone like Sam Raimi, an authorized horror director, doing this. And oh my God, it's done with such prestige, man. It's such a great scene.
It's just so chilling to just hear all the blood curdling screams, and it really could have benefited from, you know, a higher rating, an R rating almost, but you take what you can get. I just love just the horror aspect of the scene, just how, just showing kind of like how easily that Dr. Octopus could just rip apart these people with barely even thinking about it.
Yeah, I love that scene a lot, actually. It's probably one of my favorite scenes, but it's going to be an honorable mention because we're talking top Spider-Man cinematic moments, and my next one, my number three, is going to be the one that every single fanboy last year walked out of the theater jizzing in their pants from. It's Spider-Man's opening sequence in Captain America Civil War. Sorry, man. I know it's not a Spider-Man movie, but it counts to me. It's got to be on this list.
It definitely counts, man. It definitely counts.
Yeah, you know, it took some while to think about this, especially when I bought the film, rewatched it twice, and I'm like, and I put it in the other night. It's like 1 a.m, and I'm like, I have to rewatch the sequence again. I'm like, no one gives a shit about what anyone else is doing. Everyone only cares about what Spider-Man's doing, and he's so good in that scene. He definitely
steals the scene in that airport scene.
And as Nick said so well when we reviewed the film, and he said it many times in the podcast, after that scene, after Spider-Man exits the film and Black Panther kind of exits the film, you care so much less about it. At least I did, because you had the two best parts of that film walk away, even though it's a Captain America movie. Because they stole the show so well. So my number three is, yes, Spider-Man and his first opening scene in Captain America Civil War. So on to you, Nick.
All right. Well, my number three, Dan already mentioned Spider-Man 2. And Spider-Man 2 is going to get a lot of love from me in the business end of this countdown. So my number three is the bank scene, guys. The first confrontation between Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus.
Oh yeah, with the money bags getting thrown around.
When Doc Ock stands there in that trench coat and everything, he rips the bank vault door off and he throws it backwards. And then not just the bank scene, but the subsequent scene that follows when he chases him outside and they battle up the side of the tower and Doc Ock has Aunt May prisoner and, you know, drops it, Butterfingers, you know, and it's such an amazing action sequence. It really plays off the abilities of both the hero and the villain in the scene. Raimi does action in the Raimi trilogy so well. It's one of the things when they redid it, when they did the Amazing Spider-Man series, not to say, and I'll mention the lizard fight in Amazing Spider-Man, probably in honorable mentions. Unfortunately, it's not going to make my list, but that's because Raimi did everything so right in Spider-Man 2 that it's literally a benchmark that's nigh impossible to reach. It's all
crazy. Nick, not to cut you off, but in any comic book movie, not just Spider-Man movies, but in any comic book movie.
You're exactly right. It's not just a Spider-Man film either. It's all comic book movies. This film is literally one of the benchmarks in terms of superhero cinema where it like literally every single thing about it is on point. I don't want to get into too much of a love fest for the film, even though I will over my next two picks, I promise. But this scene, like the first confrontation after Doc Ock wakes up, they fight against each other. It's like Justin said, he's whipping the money bags at him. And then Spider-Man's powers are failing him because he's got that self-doubt and everything. He's so stressed out and overwhelmed by all of his responsibilities. And then it's so good. Like one of the things that I will always go back to with this film is the practical effects work, the puppet work that they did with the tentacles. Like for some of the scenes, they had puppeteers controlling each of the tentacles. Like
his
hat, the scene where he lights a cigar, the scene where he drinks a glass of bourbon. Like that's all practical effect shots.
Do you think they would do that now? They wouldn't. No.
No, they wouldn't do that now. You're exactly right.
That's why
it's so good, and that's why these tentacles are so much. They're as much a character in this film as Otto Octavius
himself. I 100% agree.
And then they become one character. It's so amazing. Yeah, that's my number three, the bank scene in Spider-Man 2. And we're going to kick it over to Dan. We're getting into the good stuff now, guys. Number two.
Down to the nitty gritty.
Number two.
All right. So Justin pretty much nailed it. My number two isn't the whole Spider-Man coming into the MCU kind of scene. It was really when Tony Stark goes, "Underoos!" And Spider-Man takes Captain America's shield and just goes, "Hey, what's up, everybody?" Basically, my penis got immediately erect, shot everywhere, and I was done for the movie. Like, that was it.
That's all we needed, though.
This is seriously the rest of Civil War with sticky pants.
But Dan,
no, I didn't have pants because it just blew through the pants.
But tell me this though, this is reality though. This isn't just us. This is the fanboy reality or anyone's reality. Loisos opened up a theater before the movie opened. The cartridge from
that was the wrong button.
Disney opened. I'm not wrong, damn it.
No, that was
and
the wrong
we watched
button.
That
I meant
movie,
to hit this.
And it, ooh, and it was like, it was literally like, we literally watched The Nice Guys, and then we went to watch from The Nice Guys to watch Civil War. It was later than this. And then after I saw that whole sequence and after I saw Spidey do that, Dan, I was like, okay, I saw the movie. I can leave now. I can go watch it tomorrow because I have tickets for it to see it tomorrow night. Like, you already know what you're getting into. And, like, that's what I came to see in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really it. I was like, man, I just want to see Spider-Man. Like, as soon as they announced Spider-Man, I was like, man, I just want to see Spider-Man. I don't care about anything else. Just show me Spider-Man.
So all of... We'll admit, Nick, we have to admit on the show here, real quick, we were the naysayers. We did complain a little bit because we were like, we were probably those guys that were like, I don't want to see all those fanboys get their way. We don't want to see those fanboys get Spider-Man back to the MCU because everyone's like, get Fantastic Four back to the MCU, get X-Men back to the MCU, get all of them back to the MCU. We're like, no, we want to see them suffer just because we hate them so much, but we don't, and it worked out great.
I will agree with you in terms of the X-Men. I think, especially with things like Logan and Deadpool, granted, Fox also churned out Apocalypse, but the three out of their last four films, Days of Future Past, Deadpool, and Logan, have all been fantastic movies. And Apocalypse was just unfortunately a huge misstep in that. So X-Men can stay right where they are. Fantastic Four, Jesus God, don't even mention that. And then Spider-Man, I mean, we definitely saw with the Amazing Spider-Man films. Unfortunately, Sony just, what they wanted to do is they wanted to ride the Marvel wave. They wanted to jump on board this whole Marvel idea of creating a universe and doing all this stuff. But, like, I mean, they cast an amazing actor and an amazing actress to play Spider-Man and Gwen Stacy, respectively, in Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. But then the material just lets them down so, so much.
Yeah, there's some great scenes there. Some great scenes to be had, but those scenes don't fit well within the context of the films that they're in.
Exactly.
So it just kind of takes you out of them.
That's the crux of the Amazing Spider-Man films. Not to get off on too much of a sidebar about that, but they are filled with, there's some really great moments in them. But, like, overall, those films are a muddled clusterfuck. And they're just, overall, as films, they're just not good.
That's going to get into, ladies and gentlemen, my number two most powerful, I would say, Spider-Man moment. And I'm just going to read off what this character says, and I'm sure you guys will all get it. I want you to know that I will always be there for you. I will always be there to take care of you. I promise you that.
Oh, wow.
I will always be your friend.
Wow.
Only a friend, Peter Parker.
Oh,
that's
wow.
That's all I have to give.
Wow.
And that to me is essential, not only to the character, but to any major superhero.
Wow.
And it's so powerful walking away from that because we get that first full movie and no other comic book movie up until that point had kind of done that thing. I mean, yes, we see in the first Batman, I've got to go to work. We're out there. We can try to make this work with Superman. They touch on it, but it was that true moment where you realize at the end of the film that he is Spider-Man, and I love that feeling. And I think about it right now, and I'm talking to you guys as I'm looking at you at Skype. We're viewing this, we're recording this, and it's fucking 1:30 a.m. in the morning, and I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. And that's how special that is to me. And that's why, you know, Toby gets the hate. I get it. He was in three. I get that people hate him. I get that people like to make fun of him. The memes are glorious to make fun of Tobey Maguire for his Peter Parker in three and whatever. But in the first two films, I think he's great. I think he's fantastic. And I do love his Spider-Man. And that moment for me defines what any superhero should be. They sacrifice for the greater good. And they sacrifice even though they know what they want. This is what I need to do. And I'm going to do it. And that's why it's my number two.
I will not offer any argument except for the fact that Spider-Man 2 very rapidly undoes the ending of Spider-Man 1 because he still pretty much pursues Mary Jane for all of Spider-Man 2.
Well, of course. She's the only chick that... Come on. We all know what it's like to be after.
I know.
So
I know. Yeah, I get it. I'll jump onto my number two really quickly here. Dan actually already named this as his number three. It is Doc Ock's Awakening. This is an amazing goddamn scene. And Justin had it absolutely right. Raimi getting in touch with his horror roots, going Evil Dead on this fucking thing. It's PG-13, and this scene, like, if I'm a kid, this scene is fucking terrifying.
It's chilling. Fucking chilling, man.
Yeah, dude. Like, these tentacles coming to life. It's pure horror. Like the girl getting dragged across the floor, like, leaving
oh my God. On
the
floor.
The nails scraping on the floor. Oh, my God.
Shit, is that a great, great scene. Dan already said it very, very well when he named that scene as his number three. So, yeah, that's it. Doc Ock Awakens. And, Dan, it's time, man. I'm pretty sure we're all going to have time. The same number
this,
one.
Yeah, this if this isn't everyone's number one, you're wrong. And, it's time. You know, leave the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Vader time.
God damn it,
Vader. 90s, some 90s wrestling for you guys.
Yeah, but he wasn't in the cage, which is obviously the number one scene. No, I'm kidding.
No. Bonzo is ready.
Right, no. Obviously, the number one scene is the train scene from Spider-Man 2.
Of course. Of course. Let's just get into it. Let's
not even a question.
100%.
This is across the board, not only on this show, but I feel like in general with film fans, cinephiles, hardcore comic book movie fans, whatever, there's no question about this. Dan, tell us why you think it's the best.
Well, we get a great fight between Doc Ock and Spider-Man. That's number one. It's a really good fight. Like, and that alone would probably put itself on the list. But then Doc Ock starts making this an unfair fight because Doc Ock is not held to the same morals that Spider-Man is. So Doc Ock starts picking people out of the train and throwing them off the fucking train.
I love it. Oh,
Spider-Man
so
has to save said people from dying. Because they're being thrown from the train. And then Doc Ock's just like, oh yeah, he definitely doesn't have my same moral code. I'm just going to rip the fucking brakes out of this goddamn train, accelerate it to as fast as it will go, and Spider-Man has to save all these people while I can make my getaway. Everything about this scene is correct. This is how you play a villain. This is how you characterize a villain. Moral code villain, like villains that have no moral code should be doing this all the fucking time. And Doc Ock plays on Spider-Man's moral code perfectly.
Dan, I have to ask you. I have to ask you. Is Alfred Molina's Doc Octopus the best Spider-Man on-screen cinematic villain out of any of the films? Yes or no?
I mean, he's better than Venom. He's better than Harry. He's better than the Lizard. He's better than the Rhino. He's better than Electro. It's close with Keaton. I don't know. I have recency bias with Keaton, so I can't say for sure. But between him,
I would say Keaton's the closest thing that came on. But honestly, yeah. I think visually spectacular, Molina's Doc Octopus. I mean, I don't think anything could ever touch Dr. Octopus. And that's why I don't think they've rebooted or redone that character, because Molina's version is so perfect.
Yeah, and he's also a tragic character because he loses everything. Not only does he lose his wife, not only does he lose his life work, he also loses his mind. For the most part, because the arm actually are what takes over. Yeah. So everything about Doc Ock is just not him at that point. Like,
that's why
I
love the character, because he's going in and out because, you know, I forget what the thing is called, the mind refibrillator or whatever.
Inhibitor chip.
Yeah, there it is. Inhibitor chip. Yeah, it's going in and out. So it's like you'll get moments of him and you'll get moments of
whenever
the tentacles.
Reasserts control over the tentacles. And Justin, jump right in here and let us know why this is also your number one, because you know this is my fucking number one too. There's no question about it.
It's a given. This is the movie, and I was telling Loy Sauce as we were driving to go see Apes tonight, that was the spectacle of it. I saw that movie in theaters opening night, and I couldn't wait to go back. I literally waited in line the next morning as soon as I woke up, as soon as theaters opened up at Lowe's, well, it's AMC now in Vestal, go get tickets again, to see it again, because I couldn't fucking wait. I saw that movie three times in theaters within a week. And then I took people the third time that didn't even care about Spider-Man or any kind of comic book movie, because I'm like, you have to see this. Like, nothing had been done up until that point, and nothing has been done since that touches it with at least a fight sequence, because of the nature of Dr. Octopus versus Spider-Man. And of course, we see Spider-Man so heroic at the end of that with his web stopping that subway car. It's literally it's still the best moment in Spider-Man film history. They have yet to touch it. And like I said earlier on in our Spider-Man Homecoming review, they get close to it. They definitely try to get that close. I'm sure Dan would agree with the fairy. But I feel like it's taking a little bit of homage from it, but I don't think they'll ever touch it completely.
Well, to parlay off that, they try to do that constantly. They try to reference Amazing Spider-Man 33 constantly. They want to always have, like, because I originally thought before seeing the building collapse, I thought for whatever reason, the fairy was going to be like the big Spider-Man show of strength, you know, an indomitable will that Spider-Man is known for. I thought that was going to be it in this movie. No, it turns out the building collapsing on himself. I can't remember what it is in the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but I'm sure they tried to have like this indomitable will kind of moment in there too. But like they're always trying to invoke Amazing Spider-Man 33. That's always what they're trying to invoke with these big shows.
And because, again, this is also my number one, and something that you guys haven't mentioned yet is the battle's incredible. The entire action scene, one of the greatest comic book movie action set pieces of all time. I don't think there's any disagreement with anybody here. But after he stops the train and he passes out, like the exertion is so much for him, he passes out and they catch him and they carry him, you know, over their shoulders, and they lay him down, and then the one guy looks at him and he just says, he's just a kid, you know, and the reality of this situation is driven home in all these passengers on the train. They hand him back his mask, the little kids, and they say, you know, you dropped this, even though he ripped it off of his head, you know, way back on the tracks or whatever, but that's neither here nor there. That moment where the passengers on the train just, you know, they understand how hard he has fought for them, and they understand how much he's willing to sacrifice for them. He's willing to give everything just to protect them, just to save their lives. And, you know, the respect that they have for him in that moment is amazing. And that's why it's great when in the first film, I really knock, because it's a very post 9/11 reactionary scene in the first film where the Green Goblin, they're throwing garbage at him and they're like, you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. Like,
that's so cheesy.
It's so cheesy. And it really is kind of it's a very just post 9/11 reactionary scene. But
I like the cheese.
Shut up. In the second film, though, it makes so much sense.
It does, though.
They're so invested in the sacrifice that he has tried to make. Like, he literally gave his all to stop that fucking train. He's exhausted himself in every way. And, you know, it's so amazing, and it's so cathartic, and it's so brilliant. And they just... It's the love and the respect for the hero. And Justin mentioned earlier talking about like aspiring to be a hero, and like that's what you look for in a superhero movie. That's what I look for in a superhero movie, is moments like that where, you know, he has proven himself to the people that he wants to protect so much that they're willing to step between he and Doc Ock and say, no, you're not getting to him. You got to go through us. Of course, Ock makes fucking short work of him. Just the tentacles parts him to the side and fucking grabs Spidey and kidnaps him real quick. But that entire sequence is just brilliant, literally from beginning to end. It is literally comic book films do not and have not gotten better literally from the moment that Ock kidnaps MJ till the moment he knocks out Spidey on the train. Comic book set pieces do not get better than that. They do not. There's others that match it that are as good, but there is none better.
That's right. I agree.
All right, and we'll go ahead and we'll jump in now for honorable mentions. I have a couple. Dan, we'll jump over to you. Anything that you wanted to throw an honorable mention at here for top Spidey scenes?
Yeah, so the wrestling match, obviously, from the original Spider-Man movie, just where it, like you said, where it all began. This, like, up until that point, it's, you know, everyone's just kind of...
Bonesaw is ready.
Yeah, everyone's just kind of being selfish and an asshole, as Nick would put it. I don't see it that way, but whatever. I mean, but the wrestling match, you know, as much as I get on Tobey Maguire for not being a great Spider-Man, when he does quip, and really he only does quip during the wrestling match, otherwise he's not really fucking talking much in the suit, other than just like, no, don't do that, Doc Ock or Green Goblin. Don't kill those people. But, the wrestling match is just awesome. And despite the hate that this movie gets, it's this is one of the best scenes from it. I'm, of course, talking about the bell tower scene from Amazing Spider-Man 3. Just from Spider-Man 3. Fucking incredible to watch Peter Parker struggle with his internal demon of Venom and what Venom is bringing out of his body. You know, it's not tremendously shown throughout Spider-Man 3. You know, he becomes emo Parker. It gets really weird there in the middle, like before he rips the suit off. But, you know, you do see him become a different person. Like he becomes stronger, more violent. And, you know, eventually he realizes, you know, strength isn't everything. I have to be in control of myself. Yeah. So that's when you go to see him rip off the suit. And not only that, but when the Venom symbiote actually drips down onto Eddie Brock, it's horrifying to watch it as it encompasses Eddie Brock.
I would agree with you, actually. Out of that movie, that's one of the only things that I can remember that I actually liked. It's so crazy.
That's one of those iconic scenes from that film where, I mean, it's ripped straight from the animated series where, you know, they did it very similarly. If you remove it from context, like in the context of the film, I agree with Dan. I think it belongs on an honorable mentions list. I wouldn't say it would be a top five. If you put it in context of the film, there's no way it belongs any fucking where near the list. But again, that's what, when I looked at this list, and I don't know if you guys would say the same, but when I look at this list, just I look at it out of context. I look at it in terms of the scene itself. And, you know, exactly what it does for the characters within it and what it does for the, you know, just kind of everything overall. You know, I look at the scene more for what it is than for what it means. It's like the Gwen Stacy's death, my number five.
Yeah, that would never, again, like. Sorry, go ahead.
It comes off as almost an afterthought in Amazing Spider-Man 2. And, you know, I don't want to get on that too much, but I'll jump on mine, Justin. We'll kick over to you in just a moment here. But some of my honorable mentions here really quickly, also from Spider-Man 3, Dan, I'll also throw some love its way for The Birth of Sandman.
Okay.
Yep, The Birth of Sandman. I think the score here is one of the best moments. And it's on point when he's trying to form himself out of sand and he tries to pick up the locket and everything like that. It's really, really heartbreaking. It's really heart-wrenching. They kind of tried to do the tragic angle with Sandman that they tried to do with Doc Ock. And it's not to say that Thomas Hayden Church wasn't up to it. I love Thomas Hayden Church. I think he was good for the role. I just don't think that it was realized well enough on screen. But that's one of them. And the only reason I'm going to put these as honorable mentions is because I couldn't pick just one to put in my list, so I decided to put them all as one bulk in the honorable mentions, everything including J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh, my God.
In the three random films. J.K. Simmons is literally this fucking character.
Are we ever going to see this character again?
I mean,
I feel like they already know that version is so iconic. It's like, let's not touch it again. So we're already in our second reboot, and the first reboot didn't have him, and the second reboot's not going to have him, so what the fuck? Now he's Commissioner Gordon in Justice League.
Because how can you touch it? It's one of those things, and eventually somebody will do it. Eventually it will happen. Maybe in the Spider-Man Homecoming sequel we'll see it, but it's one of those things where when you look at what J.K. Simmons does with the character, he steals every single scene he's in all three movies. He captivates you from the second he shows up until the second that scene ends. He's just that fucking good in that role. He's absolutely amazing. And one more honorable mention here, and I want to kick it over to Justin. The ending battle in the original Spider-Man film between the Green Goblin.
Yeah, that's
Spider-Man.
One of mine, yeah.
It's,
so, there you go.
It's not even because... It's not. I have huge issues with the Goblin glider and all that shit, but it's the brutality of that fucking fight. This is a PG-13 comic book movie. That fight is brutal as Hell, you don't see shit like that nowadays in comic book movies. It's far more family friendly. It's far less brutal. It's far less, you know.
Well, what happens? Intense. I mean, think about what happens to Goblin. Think about what happens with the glider, you know?
You're exactly right. And Willem Dafoe, of course, is amazing as the Goblin in spite of the fucking helmet. But just that scene, like that fight is a brutal knockdown, drag out battle between these two characters. It's a fantastic fight scene in its own right. It almost made my list, but I didn't put it on the list just because of the goddamn fucking helmet. I hate that fucking helmet.
I can relate to you and your hate for the helmet before I get to a couple of my honorable mentions, only because I rewatched, yes, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man recently for its anniversary. I watched the Blu-ray, my setup, and I still legitimately love the movie. A lot about the movie. I really enjoy it. I like it a lot. It's definitely not the best Spider-Man movie, but dude, the helmet, it's so hard to get past. When you look at what they originally came up with, the animatronic face that literally looked like the Green Goblin with the huge orange eyes, it looked awesome, but I don't see that translating well on screen either with the version that they were making, the film they were making. So what else would they have done? Because in the comics, it's just a mask he puts on. So that's the hard part. And I feel like they were kind of stuck in a corner and they made a quick decision and probably not the decision from what I've read that Sam Raimi wanted to make, but it had to be done. So
it is what it is. 100% on that, Justin. It's one of those kind of tough things where, especially because you can listen to the commentary and you can watch the special features on the original Spider-Man DVD or Blu-ray, and Raimi and the effects team, they all talk about the Goblin suit and they all talk about the tests that they did with the makeup and the practical effects. With the only thing to me is, no matter what way you slice it, and the only reason I ever find fault with it is because Raimi and Willem Dafoe is just so fucking good as the Goblin.
He's the best. He's so, which is why it's more frustrating.
I get that point, and we'll never know because we didn't get a chance to see that in the film. But it's one of those things where I really feel like I think it would have played better because it would have been Dafoe himself playing the Goblin.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than him with the fucking helmet on. But yes, moving on to, yes, a couple honorable mentions, not that many. But the first time we ever see Peter Parker actually using his powers as Spider-Man, crawling up the wall. I know when you watch it now, Nick, yes, of course, you're going to say the CGI looks dated. I don't give a shit about that. The simple fact is seeing that in the theater for the first time was one of the coolest moments ever of being a teenager. And just for the first time seeing Spider-Man actually wall crawl in a cinematic way on this huge big screen, and it looked good for the time. Like I said, when you see him now, the CGI for just Peter Parker crawling up the actual brick wall, it doesn't look that good. It looks actually quite bad. But you have to think of it in the context of when it was made, and that's a lot of the movies that I like. So I'm not going to hold it against it because I understand the point. But as you already said just a minute ago, the bridge fight with Spider-Man and Green Goblin, that was another honorable mention. Other than that, I have to say, even though it's not really a full scene, I love Dane DeHaan, and I liked his version of the Green Goblin in The Amazing Spider-Man 2 very, very much. I've said it many times on the podcast. I would have loved to see more of his version of the character. He's a great actor. I feel he's being underutilized in a lot of the movies he's getting roles in, working with great directors, but not getting much out of what the scripts are providing to him. But I loved when he showed up at the end of that movie. He was just in the wrong movie at the wrong time and ham-fisted, shoehorned into the script and into the film. So he didn't luck out, neither did we. So that's it. That's all I got.
All right, and yeah, guys, that was our top five Spidey moments. Let us know over in the Hopester's Dumpster, over on Twitter, do you agree with our moments? Or if you have some of your own, throw them at us, because we'd love to get into a bigger discussion about all of that. Stay tuned for episode 107 coming this Thursday. Paul from the Countdown is going to be joining us for a Planet of the Apes retrospective. That's the first two films. And then myself and Justin will be reviewing War for the Planet of the Apes. Thank you very, very much for listening, guys, and we will see you at the movies. So-